Hello, this is David Gordon Koch reporting for the NB Media Co-op. The Carney government has introduced an online harms bill that would restrict access to social media for kids under 16 unless companies can show their platforms are safe. The legislation will also impact AI chatbots. The bill will involve the creation of a so-called Digital Safety Commission that will enforce the law. For more on this, I spoke to Professor Erin Stoiter. She's a professor of sociology at Mount Allison University, and she's critical of Bill C-34, also called the Safe Social Media Act. She spoke to us from Sackville. Thanks for joining us today, Professor Stoiter.
Thanks for having me.
First, can you walk us through what we know about how this bill will actually restrict children's access to social media? What will it do?
Well, as I understand it, it's going to require all users of social media to prove their age. And one way is to provide a great deal of personal data that, you know, documents your age. There's some discussion about a second option where if you've had social media accounts for a very long period of time, they're going to assume that you probably by now must be over 16. But the people in the data privacy sort of tech sector say that that technology actually doesn't quite exist yet. So it's much more likely that everyone's going to have to prove that they're not under 16. And that's one of the things I'm quite concerned about.
Okay, so that would probably involve having to upload some kind of an ID, like a driver's license or something of that nature.
Yeah, that's right. And so then that's like a lot more personal information that's out there that could be susceptible to a hack or to data harvesting by the company or third parties. I think puts a lot more people at risk and also makes it even more challenging to participate a little bit more anonymously in social media. And there are certain groups who have quite a legitimate need to protect their identities because of hate crimes and things like that. And they're going to be sort of pushed to the sides.
You were telling me about this before this interview. The government has avoided input from youth themselves. Can you talk briefly about how the bill was developed? How did we get to this point?
I don't have a lot of details on the process. I understand from the kind of children's and youth rights sector that they are very concerned that people from their sector haven't been involved, and in particular, youth haven't been involved, and that they're moving rather quickly, that they could announce this and they could set up this commission that they're looking at and then get that commission to bring in a lot more voices and then initiate it. But it looks like they're trying to drive it through quite quickly.
You know, you've also raised concerns that a bill like C-34 will marginalize youth from their own online communities. Can you elaborate on this point?
I think that there is an underestimation on the part of these policy developers what social media can mean for youth and the very important, I would say, like mental health role that it plays, in which people are connecting with others who are like-minded, particularly if they live in more isolated communities. They, you know, there may not be like a critical mass to connect with. And I think they just underestimate how important online connections and relationships are. And so cutting young people off from, you know, discovering other people who are like them, either politically like them or maybe gender identity like them or creatively like them, and having an opportunity to experiment and play on social media, which can be a very creative space, like until they're 17 years old, I think is extremely unreasonable, given that there's other alternatives to creating a safe space for young people online.
Alternatives. Could you talk more about some of the alternatives that you're thinking of there?
Well, some of the people who are like most aggressively advocating for this bill are listing all of the harms that happen to young people or the potential to happen to them in social media spaces. And they're not lying or making things up. It's true that it can be a very harmful place. And you hear about people who are being kind of coached to commit suicide or who are being sextorted, where, you know, sexual images of them are being taken and then they're being blackmailed for them. And, you know, there's some really ugly things that happen on social media, but there's also ways to address that, and it would take some action on the part of the big social media platforms to reduce some of their problematic practices. So particularly things like having these algorithm recommendations in which you're just constantly being fed the next more kind of conflictual piece of information, saying maybe you want to look at this, maybe you want to look at this, and you just wanted to look up some basic information, and before you know it, now you think the earth is flat, and that they're molesting children in the basement of the pizza restaurant and all these kinds of things. It would be not difficult to remove those practices on the part of the big data or the big media companies. And so some of those practices could be the target instead, so that the social media space would be safer for young people, but it would be safer for everybody, so that these young people would not turn 17 and all of a sudden be exposed to buyer beware, the whole onslaught of the challenging world of social media. And in addition, we could have pressure to change, have the media companies change their practices, but we could also have heightened media literacy. We could have national, we could be putting, this panel and this money and this scrutiny into a media literacy program where young people would have a much greater understanding of the types of, ownership structures and advertising structures and profit models that these media companies operate under, so that they would, be better informed and aware moving forward. And in particular, I'm quite disappointed that that's not the route we're going. Canada actually has had a strong history of media literacy training in the past, but we've really basically left it now for the social media companies to regulate themselves. And now the only thing we're asking them to do in this bill is basically just to make sure that someone's old enough to play in kind of their, dirty playpen, as opposed to cleaning it up for everyone. It's quite difficult to get the social media companies to change their behavior, and the ban is actually the easiest. And so many countries, including the UK, which was also looking at a more nuanced program, are all just pivoting to saying, well, you just have to have age verification. So it's concerning that they're not willing to put the effort into getting the social media companies to change their behavior when we've seen such bad behavior. Like, if you think about on X, where they were using the various deep fake technology to, show sexualized images of people without their consent in open violation of Canadian law. I guess the other concern I have is about criminalization. So if, this seems like the target is the social media companies, but if youth are going to get fake IDs, which is the history of what happens when you make age bans, is people get around them, then there is a possibility that if they don't necessarily come after the youth to hound them, that it's certainly going to be more difficult for the youth, I think, to come forward and to report problematic behavior. We already see it's very difficult for youth to come forward to say that they have been a victim of some kind of sextortion or cyberbullying, or that they have kind of gotten into some kind of radicalized or polarized space. But then when they weren't supposed to be there, and they were there in violation of the law, and that they got there by using a VPN or by using some kind of fake ID, it's going to be even more difficult for them to come forward to friends, family, or policing services. And so I think that we're going to see exploited youth, kind of not having resolutions for themselves. And I think Australia, which was the first to try the ban policy, is already seeing that it's not preventing young people from seeing problematic social media content, and they are starting to see some of these kinds of criminalization problems.
Right. So on one hand, it's got a lot of risks. On the other hand, it's probably not going to work.
And it's very satisfying for the policymakers to say, we heard that you are upset about vulnerability of youth, and we took action, and we made a law. And it's a very quick win for them, but it's not actually a win for anyone who cares about the state of youth. And there is a lot of concern. Surveys are showing that youth have like high levels of anxiety and are vulnerable in many ways. And none of those things are going to be fixed by this ban. Like, the employment the employment situation, the economic situation, the acceptance of diversity and inclusion situation. None of those things are going to change because, you know, you have to go and tell, show someone, you know, wait until you're 17 to, you know, play on the internet. And so all of those, what I would consider to be like fundamental structural causes of the situation that many youth are experiencing right now are not going to be addressed, but the government's going to claim a win.
Someone commented that this might be a way for the government to basically police dissent on issues such as criticism of Israel, for example, on other issues that where we've seen increasing clampdowns. Are you concerned that that this could fall into the wrong hands and be used for that kind of political political clampdown?
And it's not even going to fall in the wrong hands if a court that comes up to them and says, we want to see the ID and of the people who participated in this speech, which we contend is, you know, problematic or, you know, domestic terrorism, or we have retroactively made it domestic terrorism. We want to hear your conversations about abortion. We want to hear your conversations about gender affirming care. We want to hear your conversations about Palestine. We want to hear your conversations about land back. Like, they're going to... It doesn't have to be a bad actor. They're just going to, their compliance officer is just going to hand over your data with the copy of your ID card and your facial recognition. And they're just going to say, well, you shouldn't have been doing anything like that anybody could object to. But obviously, any type of social change activity and even any type of almost just survival activity for many communities can be, you know, labeled outside the bounds at any moment.
Professor Stoiter, anything else to add before we wrap up?
No, thanks very much for having me.
Okay, I've been speaking to Professor Aaron Stoiter, Professor of Sociology at Mount Allison University. Thanks so much for joining the MB Media Co-op today. This interview was recorded on Friday, June 12th in Elsabooktook as part of media production workshops hosted by the NB Media Co-op. It was made possible in part by the Local Journalism Initiative. We also acknowledge support from the Canadian Race Relations Foundation with funding provided by the Government of Canada. Thanks also to St. Thomas University's Outage Program for providing access to the classroom at the Elsabooktook Community Service Centre.